All right, let's jump into a deep dive on a case that really shook things up. We're talking about Hustler Magazine, Inc. v. Falwell. This one goes way beyond a simple legal battle. It really gets into how we view free speech, especially when it comes to satire, and how we think about emotional distress, especially when it involves public figures.
Yeah, you hit the nail on the head there. It's this clash of really fundamental principles that makes this case so interesting. I mean, on one side, you've got Hustler Magazine, which, as most folks know, is notorious for pushing the envelope with its content, often pretty outrageous stuff. And then they go and publish this parody ad targeting Jerry Falwell, a big-name televangelist and political commentator back in the day.
And let's be real. That ad wasn't exactly subtle, was it?
Not at all.
It was riffing off of those old Campari ads, but instead of talking about someone's first time trying the liqueur, it implied, well, let's just say, a very inappropriate, completely fictional first-time scenario with Falwell and his mother.
Oh, it was definitely meant to shock, to be offensive. That was the whole point. But the parody very clearly labeled itself as fiction. There was even a disclaimer. Hustler wasn't trying to pass this off as factual.
Yeah, they definitely weren't hiding the fact that it was a joke. Still, Falwell took offense, and I can't say I blame him. He sued Hustler. Libel, invasion of privacy, the whole nine yards. But maybe the most important part of his lawsuit was the claim of intentional infliction of emotional distress.
Right, and that's really the core of this whole case. Interestingly, the jury actually came back with a split decision. They sided with Hustler on the libel charge because, well, no reasonable person would actually believe the parody was true. But they did award Falwell damages for emotional distress. This is what sent the case up the legal chain, eventually ending up in the Supreme Court's hands. And that brought up this huge question. Where do we draw the line when it comes to protecting free speech, particularly when it's satire aimed at public figures?
And the Supreme Court's answer to that question, let's just say it changed the game. Their decision pretty much set a ridiculously high bar for public figures like Falwell if they want to win emotional distress cases based on things that are published about them, even if it's offensive. The court said, to win, a public figure has to prove the published material contains a false statement of fact about them. And it has to be presented with actual malice.
Ah, yes, actual malice. That's the key phrase right there. It means the publisher knew the statement was a lie, or they acted with reckless disregard for the truth. Basically, they had to be intentionally lying or just completely ignoring the facts.
So, bottom line, if it's clearly opinion or satire, even if it's outrageous or offensive, it's generally protected under the First Amendment.
Right, exactly.
The court recognized that satire and parody, they have this long history of being used to criticize people in power, mm-hmm. to hold up a mirror to society, and get some important conversations going, even if they're uncomfortable ones.
Mm-hmm. Imagine if every politician could sue for emotional distress every time a cartoonist drew a, shall we say, unflattering caricature.
Right.
Political satire, commentary, even if it stings a bit, these are crucial parts of a free and open society.
This case isn't just about satire in some vacuum, though. It tackles a much bigger issue.
Yeah.
How do we balance the right to free speech with the need to protect people from emotional harm? And that's a question that's even more relevant today with the internet and everything. But before we get into all that, I think it's important to understand why the court made the decision they did. What were they really trying to protect?
Well, the court was really worried about what might happen to free speech if public figures could just easily win these emotional distress lawsuits over satire or parody.
Like,
just imagine every comedian second-guessing their jokes, afraid of some politician suing them because they didn't like the punchline.
It would totally stifle creative expression. And that open discussion that we were just talking about, forget about it.
Exactly. The court understated that satire and parody, even when it's biting or offensive, they're crucial parts of a democratic society. I mean, they often act as a check on power, right? They hold those public figures accountable and make think critically.
So the court was basically saying, look, if you're going to be a public figure, you got to be ready for some scrutiny. And that includes satire. But let's not forget, this case was decided way back in 1988, long before the internet and social media were even a thing. Do you think they could have predicted the challenges their ruling might face in the digital age?
That's a really interesting question. I mean, the media landscape has totally transformed since 1988. Back then, people got their news from just a handful of sources, you know, newspapers, TV, magazines. That was pretty much it. But now, the internet, social media, it's like everyone's got a megaphone and they can blast out their opinions to the entire world like instantly.
And that speed, that reach.
Yeah.
It can make satire really powerful, but it can also amplify harmful speech too, right? A joke that might have stayed within a small group back in the day now can go viral and reach millions in just hours.
Absolutely. And that brings up this whole new set of questions. How do you determine actual malice when you're dealing with anonymous online personas and all this misinformation flying around?
Yeah.
How do you balance that need to protect free speech with, you know, preventing online harassment and the spread of stuff that's actually harmful?
It's like the internet has blurred the lines between public figures and, well, everyone else. Anyone with a social media account has a platform now. People can suddenly find themselves in the public eye even if they didn't ask for it. Does that change how we should think about applying this ruling?
That's a really good point. I mean, the court was focused on traditional media and those public figures who really put themselves out there, right? They're actively seeking the spotlight. But now we've got this new category of accidental public figures, folks who are thrust into the public eye, sometimes through no fault of their own. It definitely complicates things, trying to apply those old legal ideas in this new digital world.
And what about the emotional impact of satire online? The court acknowledged that, yeah, offensive speech can cause emotional distress, but ultimately they decided protecting free speech was more important. Do you think they really considered how much psychological damage can happen online? Especially with how, you know, digital content can just stay out there forever.
You're right. That's a huge question. A lot of legal scholars and policymakers are wrestling with it right now. The internet's opened up these new avenues for harassment, bullying, all sorts of harmful content. And the emotional toll that takes on people, it's real. It's significant. So while Hustler v. Falwell was a landmark case, set an important precedent for protecting free speech, we can't ignore the fact that the digital age brings a whole new set of challenges. We might need to rethink how we apply those principles in the online world.
Feels like we're in uncharted territory here, trying to apply legal frameworks that were designed for a pre-internet world to a digital landscape that's constantly changing.
Yeah, it's like a constant balancing act, trying to protect that free exchange of ideas that the internet allows while also protecting people from the real harm that can happen online. Tough stuff.
So even though Hustler v. Falwell was groundbreaking in its time, it seems like it's left us with almost as many questions as answers when it comes to free speech in the digital age. How do we even begin to address these challenges? Where do we go from here? It really is. Feels like we're trying to shove a square peg into a round hole. The internet's just messed with so many of those traditional legal ideas, and free speech is right at the top of the list.
Absolutely. It's such a fascinating problem, really. I mean, the internet has opened up speech in ways no one back in 88 could have even imagined. But it's also brought these totally new challenges, things the court couldn't have possibly foreseen when they made that Hustler v. Falwell decision.
So how do we move forward? How do we protect free speech, but also protect people from the potential harm that comes with online expression? It seems impossible.
Well, I think the first step is acknowledging that the internet, as amazing as it is for communication, isn't some wild west where anything goes. The laws, the principles that we apply to offline speech, they apply online too. The trick is figuring out how to actually apply those principles to the internet in a way that makes sense.
Right, but the internet changes so fast, it feels like by the time we figure something out, it's already outdated.
It's true. It's a constant race to catch up. And honestly, there's no easy solution. It's going to take a whole bunch of things working together. Laws that specifically address online speech, open discussions between the people making the laws, the tech companies, and of course the public. And maybe most importantly, we need to work toward a more responsible, a more respectful online culture.
That's a tall order. But you're right, it's not just about laws and rules. We need a real change in how we think about and how we participate in online discussions.
Couldn't agree more. We need to promote media literacy, critical thinking skills, so people can tell the difference between real information and fake stuff, satire and something truly malicious. And we've got to encourage empathy, understanding, so that people think about how their words might impact others online.
So even though Hustler v. Falwell established this important precedent, protecting free speech, especially satire aimed at public figures, it seems like the digital age requires something more. We can't just apply old rules to this new online world.
Exactly. It's like this case reminds us that the law isn't frozen in time. It has to evolve with society, with technology. And as we figure out this whole free speech thing in the digital age, Hustler v. Falwell will always be there as a guidepost, a reminder of how we need to balance the need for expression with the need to protect people from harm.
This deep dive has really been eye-opening. Even though this case was decided decades ago, it's clear that the questions it raised are even more relevant now in this crazy connected world we live in. And the answers, well, they definitely aren't simple.
That's the truth. It's a case that'll keep us thinking, keep the debate going, and force us to confront those really fundamental questions about what free speech is, where the lines are with satire, and what responsibilities we have when we express ourselves online. And at the end of the day, it's up to all of us to be a part of this conversation and help shape the future of free speech in the digital age.
Absolutely. It's a conversation we can't ignore. Thanks for joining us today for this deep dive. We'll catch you next time.